Films in Focus with David Sterrett is underwritten by The Movie House, your destination for first-run Hollywood and independent movies, and a digital portal to the Met Opera, National Theater Live, and special events worldwide in Millerton, New York, and on the web, themoviehouse.net.
David Sterrett is the editor-in-chief of the Quarterly Review of Film and Video, contributing writer at Cineast, film professor at the Maryland Institute College of Art, and Robin Hood Radio's very own critic. He joins us weekly. The films are Never Look Away and Glass, but first he's going to talk for a moment about Jonas Mekas. Hi, David.
Hi, Jill. How are you doing this week?
I am all right. How are you?
Glad to hear that. I am doing just fine, thank you. And yeah, I would like to start out with just a brief little RIP for the great Jonas Mekas, who just died yesterday at the ripe old age of 96. I'm sure for most of our listeners, that is not a familiar name, but he was an enormously important figure in avant-garde film, sometimes called experimental film, basically non-narrative film, film that doesn't deal in any sort of commercial intention. And it's a very, very important area of cinema. And precisely because it doesn't deal in any sort of commercial intention, it's unfamiliar to most people. Avant-garde films show mainly in museums and galleries and classrooms and places like that. And also in certain sort of specialized showcases, one of which is Anthology Film Archives, which is a New York institution which Jonas Mekas founded many a long year ago. Jonas was himself a filmmaker. He made, dozens of movies, scores of movies even, some of which are quite short, some of which are hours long. He himself came over to America from Lithuania many, many, many years ago, along with his brother Adolphus Mekas, who was also an important figure in the world of avant-garde cinema. And Jonas just kept the flame burning for decades and decades, really promoting and making and encouraging avant-garde film, non-commercial film, non-narrative film in all of its many forms. I knew Jonas for many, many years back when I was in New York, always found him a very, very pleasant fellow to deal with. And again, he was unflinching in his through his entire life in promoting and encouraging and exhibiting and distributing avant-garde cinema, and it was kind of a thankless task in a lot of ways, but he stuck at it, and he will be sorely missed, even though I'm so glad that he got to live for 96 years, because he had a very long and happy career, even though it was not exactly in the Hollywood limelight. Okay, so let's turn to a couple of movies now, which are sort of somewhat more conventional films, although each in its own way is a little bit unconventional. And let us start out by talking about Never Look Away. This is a movie by the German filmmaker Florian Henkel von Donnersmarck. It's just such a pleasure to say that name. It's so imposing sounding. And he came on the scene in a pretty big way with another German film about a dozen years ago called The Lives of Others, which was didn't make all that much of an impression on me, but it was a very popular import into American theaters. And now he has made this movie called Never Look Away, which is... I'll start off by saying that it's over 3 hours long, so you got to sort of devote a good deal of time to looking at Never Look Away. I will also reveal at the outset that I was often tempted to look away from Never Look Away. I didn't find it to be a very imposing film, but it's an interesting film in a number of ways, and it's certainly well worth talking about. So we have here the story of a young German artist. It's a fiction film, but it's based very closely on reality. So our main character of this film, the young German artist, his name is Kurt Barnert, but he is based very closely on the real life artist, very celebrated artist, Gerhard Richter. And in fact, there was just recently a very long article in the New Yorker magazine by Dana Goodyear, which is about the making of this film and about Gerhard Richter's involvement with it. Von Donnersmarck did an enormous amount of interviewing of Gerhard Richter in preparing for this film, and then the film got made, and Gerhard Richter is now, shall we say, distancing himself from the film. He's not very pleased with it. There are various aspects of it which he doesn't like very much. In fact, the movie veers away from the real-life Gerhard Richter in various ways, but it stays pretty close to his real-life experience in various ways, so that lends it an extra measure of interest for those who are interested in the contemporary art world, Gerhard Richter being an extremely important contemporary painter. And again, Gerhard Richter is not very fond of the movie. So the Gerhard figure in the film, again, is this young artist named Kurt Barnert. And he is played by Tom Schilling. And the movie takes place, it starts off in the Nazi era, and then it proceeds to long after the Nazi era. And so we have at the beginning a bunch of material where our main character, young Kurt, is a little boy. And the Nazis are in power, and they are starting up a program their notorious and infamous and evil program of eliminating people who are considered to be inferior human beings. And little boy Kurt has an aunt, and his aunt turns out to be mentally ill. She apparently, I believe in the movie they call it a mild schizophrenia or some such thing, and she has a breakdown early in the movie. And she comes under the eyes of the Nazi regime, and she is scheduled for sterilization because that was one of the things that the Nazis did with people who were considered to be racially inferior during the Nazi era in Germany. And then that is changed to an order for extermination. And she is shipped off to a special place from which she will be sent off to one of the, quote, showers, unquote, and gassed to death along with a lot of other people. I must say this was the first moment when the movie really started to have a bad taste for me. Steven Spielberg's movie Schindler's List, his movie about the Holocaust, is probably the best movie Spielberg ever made. It is a very sensitively made movie about the horrific Nazi experience, and it has a lot of virtues. But that movie also has certain real failings, Schindler's List. And the scene in it that has become the most controversial is a scene where a bunch of victims are sent off to Nazi showers. And I won't reveal how that comes out if anybody has not yet seen Schindler's List. I won't give a spoiler here. But it is regarded as an episode in an otherwise largely admirable movie where Spielberg plays the idea of people being sent off to be gassed in alleged showers, plays it with Hollywood suspense techniques. And it is regarded as being kind of a cheap and meretricious moment in that film. I think that von Donnersmarck actually does the same thing. Plays this sort of scene for cheap Hollywood sort of semi-thrills, and I didn't like the way it was done. In any case, though, this is still the very beginning of the movie, because what happens over the rest of the 3 hours plus of the movie is that young Kurt grows up. And eventually, I'll just give a little bit of idea of the story here. Eventually, he gets married. First of all, falls in love with a young woman, and he gets married to the young woman. And wouldn't you know, that young woman's father, who is a gynecologist and was a Nazi, and who has been living sort of not in hiding, but managing to cover up his Nazi past in the post-Nazi era. He was the one who sterilized and then caused the death. Of Kurt's aunt, and then all of these threads of the narrative eventually come together. Now, again, all of this is kind of based on Gerhard Richter, and Gerhard Richter did some paintings later in his life, which had to do with very similar episodes from his own childhood and his own family experience, and so the movie is kind of playing off of that. So again, we have here a movie about the Nazi era. We have here a thinly veiled movie about Gerhard Richter and how he ultimately discovered his art. There's a good chunk of the movie where he is in art school, and the art school turns out to be run by a figure who is obviously Joseph Beuys, an extremely major German artist who had a very interesting documentary about his own life not too long ago. Unfortunately, that was a documentary and not a thinly veiled biopic. So we have this Joseph Beuys figure who is very obviously Joseph Beuys, who is running this art school where young Kurt eventually discovers the kind of art that he was born to make and goes on to make that art. And that's sort of the end of the movie, but not until we have a lot of wrapping up of all this Nazi stuff. So I found Never Look Away to be just a glossy, svelte-looking movie about very, very disturbing topics. And I just did not like von Donnersmarck's approach to the whole story. He makes it like, again, like a glossy Hollywood melodrama. And it's material that really should be treated vastly more seriously than that. It really is. So I don't usually get up on too much of a moral high horse about movies which are kind of doing their best to be serious looks at disturbing episodes in recent history. But this movie I just didn't think made it. I have to add that the cinematographer, Caleb Deschanel, is one of the great cinematographers of our time, but under von Donnersmarck's direction, he just makes the whole movie look pretty. And this movie, this subject, this story should not look pretty. So I was very disappointed with Never Look Away. I wanted to look away. It's a movie I'm afraid I cannot recommend. Our other movie for today is very, very different, and it is Glass, which is the new movie by M. Night Shyamalan, who burst on the scene many years ago with The Sixth Sense and then had a gigantic hit with Signs, and he's made quite a number of movies, some of which are very interesting, a couple of which or so are just awful, and now he has made Glass, which is actually the third movie in a kind of a trilogy that he's done. Way back in 2000, he made a movie called Unbreakable, starring Samuel L. Jackson in a very interesting performance. And then just about 3 years ago, he made a movie called Split, starring James McAvoy. So this is a film now. Glass brings together plot threads from Unbreakable and Split, and together these three films form what is now being called the Eastrail 177 trilogy, because they all have in common dealing with the derailment and disaster of a train wreck, the derailment of a train and a horrible wreck which affects the lives of various people, including the main characters of these movies. So again, Glass is kind of the culmination of this Eastrail 177 trilogy, which started with Unbreakable and Split. So I thought about watching Unbreakable and Split again before I looked at Glass, you know, get the trilogy firmly in my head. And then I thought, well, I remember those films well enough, so I'll just go look at Glass. And I think if you have never seen Unbreakable or Split, you're going to find parts of Glass pretty mystifying, because it's a movie which the story threads kind of wander around before they ultimately come together. As a story, as a narrative, I found Glass to be, again, a little bit discombobulated and disconnected and wandering. And I sometimes do feel that way about Shyamalan's films. He's a filmmaker who is sometimes, I am afraid, a bit too clever for his own good. Another thing about Glass, however, which I found kind of interesting, I'm not sure how many other viewers will, is that Shyamalan really has a style. You can recognize his films. He loves to have sometimes characters sort of staring into space with a sort of entranced look on their faces. And he does that again in this movie, not as conspicuously as he did in The Sixth Sense, but he does it, and it's kind of a stylistic tick of his. And it's interesting, it makes his movie sort of distinctive. More than that, he creates a kind of a depopulated world. There are rarely more than just a handful of people on the screen at any given moments in a lot of his films, very much including this one. In this movie, for example, there's a big confrontation with the cops, with sort of a SWAT team, and there's like two cops for this gigantic confrontation. There's like two cops on the screen. It's a weird way of doing things, and I'm not sure it makes any sense to have a sort of a big confrontation with the police, basically an action scene with like a grand total of two cops on the screen. But it's distinctive, and it gives the movie a look all its own that nobody but Shyamalan would have come up with. So, you know, it's kind of interesting in that way. Also, the acting in this movie, my gosh, he does get big stars. He's got Samuel L. Jackson again. He's got Bruce Willis again. They don't give what I would regard as their very greatest performances in this movie, but they're interesting to watch. And again, Bruce Willis has a long history with Shyamalan, and it's interesting to see their collaboration as it's involved. It's sort of evolved over the years. Glass has gotten really wretched reviews from most critics. I don't think it's a wretched movie. I think it's a disappointing movie, but it's so kind of weird and strange and quirky that I kind of respect it. I kind of enjoy it, and I kind of enjoyed watching it, even though it is well over 2 hours long. It has, however, done very well at the box office. Critics are not liking it. Audiences are liking it, and that's just fine with me. I'm a critic. I found it very iffy. Didn't quite work for me. But Shyamalan, again, he's a distinctive filmmaker. I respect him for carving out his own sort of niche, where occasionally making gigantic hits and occasionally making total misfires, he does stick to his guns and he makes movies the way he wants them to look. And that's admirable. In this day and age, when so many movies are just impersonal entertainment machines, he is making a very personal kind of entertainment. And I have to respect M. Night Shyamalan for doing that. So that is my up and down story this week, Jill.
Thank you very much, David Sterrett, Films in Focus. We have an RIP for Jonas Mekas, and the films are Never Look Away and Glass.